It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Stacy are here with a great show. We're going to talk about the decision by the FCC to eliminate net neutrality, good, bad, indifferent. We'll also talk about Google revising its search results to prevent fake news and the ultimate juicer, only $400. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 402, recorded Wednesday, April 26, 2017. Garanimal House. This Week in Google is brought to you by Box.com, bringing people and ideas together so businesses can work as one. 71,000 companies, including the majority of the Fortune 500, are already on Box. Why aren't you? For a free 2-week trial and to find out more, visit Box, B-O-X.com. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Ooh, I'm excited. We got a great big show planned for you. And we're going to stick with the core group because we got this tight. We got this thing going on. Jeff Jarvis, he's at the City University of New York where he teaches journalism at the grad school there. He's also a blogger, BuzzMachine.com, longtime journalist, writer, book author. It's so great to have you, Jeff. And we were just observing that we started
always
this show
August
2009, so our 8th anniversary is coming up this summer together.
We're doing a long trip down memory lane.
Yep. And we welcome the newest member, but most welcome to the show, Stacy Higginbotham, from formerly of GigaOM for many years. She was at Fortune for a minute, cup of coffee, as they say, and then started her own IoT podcast and IoT site. Hi, Stacy. You're in, where are you?
I'm in New York.
Nice. For finding out about IoT stuff?
Yes, I was doing an event for... teaching people in the media how to review connected gadgets.
Oh, that's
and telling them about smart homes.
That's the kind of boy, I didn't know people in the media were interested in learning anything.
Hey.
Yeah.
I say that as a person in the media.
I know.
Or maybe I'm a reformed media person, but that's good to know that they want to do a better job of covering it. Yeah, I presume mainstream media.
Yes, I talked to people at Martha Stewart Magazine, nice. Oprah Magazine.
Nice.
Crazy other places. Ooh. It was really neat. I learned a lot.
And we owe a debt of gratitude to, because I guess you didn't have much connectivity there. Where are you? So we can give them a plug.
Sure. I am at We Communications. You guys may be familiar with them as Microsoft's PR agency.
Oh, they used to be Wag Ed or Wagner Edstrom.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Now it's just We. What a good idea.
So they're being super kind. And let me tell you, we are accruing all kinds of technical debt with them. Good Lord.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it was started by Pam Edstrom, who was a Microsoft employee, then spun off into an agency of her own.
Didn't one of the founders just die recently?
Yes. The life of Pam Edstrom. She did. Yeah. A message from Melissa Wagner Zorkin, who was the Wagner in Wag Ed. Venerable agency.
For years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Anybody who covered tech knew Wag Ed.
Tech PR was its own unique world in PR. It made its own kind of PR stars.
It's kind of interesting. I mean, they were so tightly associated with Microsoft for so many years. I'm glad they're still doing what they're doing. That's great. And thank you.
I was going to say, I think they have more than just Microsoft now.
Oh, yeah.
They have lots of clients.
Well, I think the rebranding to We was smart. I like that. Anyway, we have lots to talk about, so I'm not going to drag it out here. I don't know where to start, though. Google has said... they may be doing an ad blocker in Chrome. Or no, they haven't said anything, but apparently that's the Bloomberg story. There is a post from Google Search head Ben Gomes that they're going to change how search works because of the fake news problem and the snippets problem. And they're going to use humans, us.
Well, they've always used humans.
But we're going to make it easier for us to get involved. Yeah.
But they've changed the... criteria. And what struck me about this, what I think is very important, is that Ben Gomes, who's the genius in search at Google, talks about favoring quality, talks about reliable sources, talks about giving people authority. I think that's a really big deal. It's not Google's not saying we're favoring truth, but we're favoring reliability, quality, and authority. That matters in a few ways. That's Google deciding to bias in favor of the good stuff and decide what the good stuff is. You know, not that Google didn't to an extent. They always wanted a good experience. They always wanted relevance. But now to say out loud they want quality, I think is good for Google and good for those of us who fancy that we make quality.
It's kind of timely because Robert Persig passed away this week, the author of Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. And much of the book is really about quality, right? He talks a lot about quality. What is quality? And it's funny because, gosh, you'd think that from day one, the quality of their search results was the most important. That's what they offer, right? There's Persig.
But people learned how to game the system. I mean, that if we think about Google's in the constant race, and they use, you know, what the original was like people linking back, authoritative linking back. People started gaming that, and then they started using different metrics. And so this is not like a huge change. I think Google has always wanted to surface the best and brightest. And now that we're in such an automated age, I think it comes back to people. So I don't know.
The thing about it, quality is it's one of those things, you know, when you see it, but it's pretty hard to pin down. And everybody's idea of what a quality search result is would vary, wouldn't it?
It depends on what you search for. I mean, if you're really searching, you know, when you search for how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, when you get a, like, that's actually a terrible example.
That's a good example because that's obvious, right?
Well, how to pick a smartphone. So
harder.
That is harder, but hopefully, you know, there's all those crappy, like, best smartphone results that are just they're just amalgamations of links. And then there's authoritative reviews. And I think the opinions may be different there, but deciding who's done the work, I guess, is probably a little bit easier. I don't know.
It's funny because when people talk about fake news, this is related in a way to fake news, right? Mm-hmm. And when people talk about fake news, it's in the eye of the beholder too. You and I, we could all agree what's a fake story. But I would say that part of the problem with fake news is that a lot of people would embrace that story. And
it doesn't make it true.
Yeah. And then there's stuff that's not factually true that would qualify easily as fake news. That's like peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Then there's stuff that can't be measured. And then there's stuff that's true in spirit, if not true in fact. And that's the big one. That's the problematic one, right?
Yeah, there's the schema, as they say. You may have, you know, the Breitbart article might have facts right, but how it chooses to interpret that or what it does. You know, the recent example was there was a...
But you can't call it fake news if it has the facts right, can you? Give me an example of a fake news story that's factually true.
Well, so there was a recent case of the alleged rape of a high school student by the son of an undocumented immigrant.
Right.
And it got no play on CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, but it was nonstop on Fox. And so the argument there that's the schema. That's the worldview you choose to present, and you say...
And it's not factually untrue.
We're taking the world.
What's factually, untrue or maybe a misrepresentation is the conclusion you draw from it.
Right, and the prioritization you give it. And so it's an interpretation of the world, which is the world is open for interpretation.
Right, and it doesn't there's editorial judgment in every news source.
Yes, absolutely. And a worldview.
And ultimately it's defined by a worldview, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Weltanschauung.
So what I think some people would say is this whole thing about fake news is my worldview versus your worldview.
Well, that's fine as long as
it's fake if it doesn't match my worldview.
Well, no, that's Donald Trump's interpretation of fake news. I'm serious.
That is. It's also some lefties' interpretation, isn't it?
I don't hear a lot of lefties, as you call them, shouting fake news.
That's because you're a lefty. you're seeing it through the prism of a lefty.
Yes.
That would be what I would submit, right? It doesn't, because we're looking through a certain filter, it looks true to us.
I wouldn't look at Fox's story that they chose to run and call that fake news if it indeed, I mean, if it happened, it happened. And, you know,
right. The only reason I'm raising this is I do think there's some difficulty in a rampage. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Nope. Your turn.
Sorry. It's the
lag.
It's driving me crazy. The delay. If they say there's a rampage of immigrants on a crime wave.
I'll give you an example.
Rapes across America.
I'll give you an example.
And that's fake.
The word wilding.
Yeah.
Which right? is.
So this is, remember that they're in Central Park. The story of the supposedly young black men who attacked a jogger. The men went to jail. But that story became a story of young black men wilding. You know, this is a trend. Furthermore, the men were eventually acquitted. And Donald Trump, and I would presume his political allies, continued to say that they were guilty and were wilding. So there's an example of there's some fact in there, and there's also some interpretation in there, and there's some actual lies in there. And how do you know what would you do with that story?
Well, if you've reported on them being acquitted, I mean, if they were acquitted, you just say that Donald Trump is wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've been acquitted, you're no longer guilty. That's, you never were.
Here's the,
last night,
here's the headline from the Daily News. You know, this was a story in 19, when was it? It was a long time ago, 89, something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Brutally raping and nearly killing a jogger during a crime spree, 36 youths wilding, randomly attacking anyone they found. And it turned out this probably was fake news. It was certainly misinterpreted. And it ended up having, five kids spending their years in jail, including Rockers Island. Because this is something innocent.
Remember Welfare Queens?
Yeah.
The 80s threat of Welfare Queens that really weren't. I mean, that's both an interpretation, and we're still actually getting a hint of that today with like the debate over healthcare. Was it Chaffetz who said, you know, people could have healthcare or an iPhone, or I cannot remember his,
right.
The implication was
the same. They'll buy an iPhone. Why shouldn't they pay for their healthcare? By the way, it was just to finish this wilding story. It was a 28-year-old investment banker who confessed years later that did it, a white guy. So, yeah. But I bet you anything in most people, and certainly in the president's mind, this is still those seven black kids. So how do you, as Google, the only reason I bring this up is how do you as Google how do you weigh this stuff? I think it's very difficult to put yourself in that position.
They don't want to. They haven't wanted to. But now that
I understand why it's a slippery slope.
They have to. You know, it's the example that I gave on the show a couple weeks ago. Search for climate change, you get one set of results. Search for this is no longer the case, but search for, at least for me, search for is climate change real? You got different results. And so at some point, Google said, no, actually, we should give the same thing. We try it right now. Climate change. So climate change.
There's a really good example because there is no agreement. I mean, there's scientific consensus, but there's no agreement among people about this. And I mean, Google might say, oh, yeah, no, it's true. It's real. But there are plenty of people who say it's not. What should Google do with that?
Well, the authoritative sources agree.
Oh, no. That's really problematic.
So that's search your on is climate change real?
Okay, so they've fixed this problem?
Now, if you search for climate change, number three is how to talk to a climate skeptic. Number seven is the 97% consensus on global warming.
Some people are going to really say that this is slanted.
Well, but toward what? Toward science? What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I'm like towards something that's provable and
true.
And
not wait a minute.
So last
hold
night,
on. Not provable. There's scientific consensus.
There's scientific
big
consensus.
Okay.
They can prove that things are changing. I mean, there's, and you know, the nice thing is if scientific consensus goes another way and they're like, oh, our bad, look what's happening. Something totally different has changed in the climate modeling and global or climate change isn't happening. And we got a bunch of scientists who agreed that that was the case and there was a set consensus, Google would change the results. And the rest of us who are like, climate change is a big deal, suddenly we'd be like, oh, here's all this proof that it's not. Okay. And we'd change our worldview and Google would change its too to reflect that.
Well, and maybe, okay, so this actually is climate change real is a really interesting search. And I should probably do this in an incognito mode. Because that's another thing. There's this filter bubble. Your results vary depending on whether you're logged in to Google or not.
Yeah, let me do that too.
But look at, so you're right. The first three results, climate change, how do we know? Climate change, vital signs of the planet, how to talk to a climate skeptic. And then top stories, two of which are climate change believers, but the third of which is a guy who says, it's all wrong, it's crazy, it's weather. That's in the top stories. So they aren't banning point opinions.
No.
I don't know.
So
this is challenging for Google, I think. And I think problematic. But
it is. So last night I interviewed David Kenny, who's in charge of IBM Watson. A fascinating hour with him on a stage at CUNY. And he talked a lot about ground truth. And that a fact is a fact. I think there's ranges here, right? There are facts, and then there are interpretations of the facts, and then there are lies. In facts, he said on climate change has been quite, you know, he used to head the Weather Channel, a weather company. It's quite the issue for him. He said that the data we do not have is data from the bottom of the ocean. That if we spent $1 trillion on sensors at the bottom of the ocean, we would know a hell of a lot more and be able to, from that model better, what's actually happening with climate. We don't have that, but we have a scientific consensus based on a hell of a lot of facts and a hell of a lot of facts that are verified. So there's the fact, there's the interpretation, and then there's the stretch and the lie.
So in the earliest days of Google, the goal was merely to reflect the internet, right? Or was it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Was it?
Yes, and well, we said that in media. Google says that. Facebook says that. We reflect. And the argument I've been making lately is that Google's mirror may well indeed be straight and true, but the world is cracked. It's cracked.
Yeah, but so that's not Google's job Google. To say, oh, let me adjust this view.
Yes, it is.
To fit
yes,
our
it is.
World
because Leo,
view.
No, it's the same with spam. So you have this article over here that has 10,000 people talking about it that says climate change is BS. You have a scientific paper over there that's annotated and factual and has two people reading it. If you use the wrong judgment, you will give too much weight to the discussion and the fake controversy being formed over here. And even worse, because it can be gamed.
I agree with you. What Google
That's not an indication of truth.
What Google should do is do everything it can to prevent gaming. What Google should not do
gaming includes the creation of fake controversy.
Yeah, gaming. It's not gaming if a lot of people gravitate towards a really inflammatory headline that may or may not be true.
Well, I'm sorry, but I think Google should reflect. Google should have a pure algorithm, and when Google deviates from that,
there's no such thing as a pure algorithm.
I would argue PageRank is a pure
algorithm.
No, I would argue that PageRank is a pure algorithm.
Your algorithms are totally your biases are reflected in how you design your algorithm. So if you design your algorithm to what you might be saying is I want the algorithm to value the mass attention, which would be the 10,000 people viewing one article versus the two viewing the scientific paper.
Well, so let's talk about how PageRank worked. Doesn't work this way anymore. It would rank the articles that were linked, not read, linked by high-ranking sites. So that was, in a nutshell, what PageRank did. I would argue the only bias there is, well, the search result should return the result that is linked to by the most high-ranking sites, which to me, yes, you could say it's a bias, but that's as pure a thing as you could do, I would say. The problem is you then have gaming, which you have to kind of maybe do something about spam and gaming. But what's wrong with that?
You also have fake controversy. You have controversies that are ginned up.
But don't you understand the huge risk that's involved if you do anything else? Because now you're going to say, okay, well, it's not giving us the results we approve of in whatever context.
We're living that risk right now. We're living the opposite risk right now.
Problem with fake news all along was that it doesn't agree with what I agree with. But that could be used by anybody. I don't want a search engine that's going to have bias built in, whether it's bias for things I believe in or bias against things
I believe. The world has bias built in. And
no, the world does not.
It's got to make a choice.
A search engine reflects what's out on the internet. If a lot of people are writing about one thing, it should reflect that, whether you agree with it or not.
No, because but they're not really people. It's made up stuff. It's PR. It's Bernays, right? The world has been warped. Media warped the world.
Well, I don't know if Google can fix that. I don't think Google can fix that.
It has to make some attempt, and that's why I think the Gomes letter is so, so important, is it's them saying we're going to make an attempt, and Facebook is saying the same thing. They have to worry about quality. Compare and contrast with Twitter, which doesn't do jack, because they argue, it's free, we can let anybody on, and we see the result there. So I think that, yeah, you're right. This is a risky path.
Fraught with peril.
It's fraught. But not doing anything, we have just learned, is more fraught.
In 20 years, when we're sitting here saying, God, we should never have let Silicon Valley determine what our values and future was, because look what we got. Are we going to come back and say, I guess that was a bad idea?
So that's what Fox News readers say about New York media. We should never have let Hollywood and New York determine our values. And so they're looking at just that. So
that's a good point. Hollywood has for several generations now projected a worldview out there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And New
it's
York
not uniform.
And
it's
news.
Not uniform. There's also Mel Gibson movies, but take those out. And there's a relatively uniform worldview for coming from Hollywood. What would you do? Then in response to that? Would you say, oh, we got to decide, we got to censor? Let's see. What about the Catholic Anti-Defamation League? Why don't we say, let's come up with a rating system and say no Catholic could see that movie because that's a worldview we
start
disagree
here,
with.
Start here. In the case of climate change, Google is now favoring the institution of science. Is there anything wrong in a company that wants to bring us to knowledge with favoring the academe and science and expertise and authority?
Okay, but I think it would be a
those
mistake.
Are the institutions that the others want to tear down. That's why it's controversial
maybe,
right now.
It would be
I think on its face to favor science? Science?
It would be a mistake to fetishize science, though, because what you call science is just today's scientific worldview, and no scientific innovation ever.
Ever thus.
It always flies in the face of the current scientific worldview. That's called
scientific method. The scientific method is always allowing for you to question that and then prove that it's wrong. And that's right. Very different than saying, I don't like it, it's wrong. Science says, I don't like this, I think it works a different way. Let me show you why I think that, and let me prove it to you. And that's a very different value in terms of quality. It's much preferred.
So
otherwise, you're just living inside someone's head.
Okay. So when it was accepted scientific fact that the sun revolved around the earth, if you were Google in the 16th century, would you eliminate search results that said it was otherwise? That Copernicus guy, got to downrank him.
They probably would have downranked Copernicus until they had... But they
would
have fixed it. They would have gotten their event. I mean, and probably faster than...
Unless he got burned at the stake, in which case, well, we'd be out of luck.
We still got there, and we'd probably get there faster with more people having that kind of input. A larger crowdsource system and gets you to the right answer faster.
By your logic, then schools, then you're in favor of teaching creationism because, hey, there are some people out there who believe in creationism, and who are we to say what's right and wrong?
Well, I would be a mistake for a school not to ignore creationism. I wouldn't teach it as scientific fact.
Same as Google does not kill off links to Holocaust deniers. If you search for Holocaust deniers, you can find them because you might want them for research and find out what they're saying. That's what Google does.
Okay.
But if you ask, is the Holocaust real? If you ask, is climate change real? It favors
academic. So here's my
academic
fear. Google's going to start. So part of the problem is that the web is not, it does not exist in a vacuum. That what we really see is the web is the result of Google searches, right? You only see what Google surfaces. That's the huge and, in my opinion, dangerous power that Google wields. And the good news is there are other search engines. So it's foolish to treat them as a monopoly. And that may be enough to fix this. But I'd be very worried if Google used some worldview. Maybe I agree with it or disagree with it, but use some worldview to rank the web, to shape the web. Don't you think there's a risk in that? Conventional wisdom says the sun revolves around the earth, so...
Leo, schools do it. Universities do it.
Well, history does it. I mean,
libraries,
that's what history
do
is.
It.
History is the story told by the winners. But what I was
the
hoping is that
the
web would be a better job than...
No, because people make it. I mean, the web is just a reflection of us and who our values... I mean, the web
it's
is
fine
not...
fine if it's a reflection of us. It's not a fine if it's a reflection of Google or
Silicon
Valley.
No, it's a reflection of how we manipulate it. It's a reflection of how we all exploit it.
Do you see what I'm saying? That it'd be one thing if it's a reflection of us, guided or misguided. It's another thing entirely if it's a reflection of Silicon Valley's worldview. That's dangerous.
But... I think you're there's got to be a word for this, you know, reverse anthropomorphizing or something. For Google to decide, I mean, it's no different from the fight for the textbooks in Kansas, right? Google decides to favor science or Texas, exactly, better yet, yes, right. Google decides to favor science, or a teacher, librarian decides to favor science in Texas.
It is no different, and that's why I don't want it. It's exactly the same.
I do want it. Good Lord, I don't want people walking around saying, well, if enough people say it, then I'm going to treat this as fact. That is fake news.
No, but I'm going to surf. If everybody in the world agrees on something, your search results should reflect that. If there's dissent, it should reflect that, whether it fits your worldview or not.
Okay, all right, hold on. Hold on. Two things. One, just because people talk about it doesn't mean that it's a survey. If you're trying to say we determine fact by survey...
I'm saying there's a huge risk in censoring or limiting the visibility of parts of the web because it doesn't fit your worldview, which everybody in your bubble agrees is true.
Okay, science is
true. It's not the web that Google's giving you. Science is true, and Google is giving you knowledge.
Science is not true. I beg to differ.
Science is true.
No.
And it is.
That's a
huge mistake. Science changes.
So something that's true shouldn't change.
That's not true.
Science is not true. Science is a result of a scientific method which aims towards truth. Science is not true. That's a big mistake. As soon as you
tell
say
me
science
better.
Well, I'm not saying I believe in the scientific method. Look,
so Google
absolutely believe
instead,
in it.
Say, Google favors the scientific method when it's favoring science.
Is that what they're saying? Is we're going to favor the scientific method? That's not what they're saying.
If you look at the results on climate change,
NASA's papers are loaded. So let's not use climate change. But in general, Google is not saying we favor scientific method. They say we favor our worldview.
No, they're saying they favor authority and quality. And
as defined by?
Well, and that's so maybe your question then becomes.
So you know,
in a time of
the Texas
revolution.
School Board is an institution.
True enough. There you got me. Okay, you got me.
Who chooses the institution? Yeah.
So, reel them in.
And it's really important to understand that it's I don't want to put – that's giving too much power to Google. By the way,
it's giving too much power to the mob.
There's a threat in this. We've been doing this show for 8 years, and if there's a threat in this show, it's me saying Google has too much power, or Google has to be responsibly use its power. And it's the problem is I understand why they're trying to do this and why Facebook's trying to do this. In fact, I think that I would say in both cases they're doing it out of absolutely benign and in fact positive motives. I just don't think we should ignore the risk.
They're also doing it to not lose ads. I mean, another story in the rundown is Google expanding the definition of hate speech because they've got a real problem around YouTube when Havas and The Guardian and Verizon all dropped YouTube. This is an economic decision, too. There's a line from hate speech to fake news.
Well, that makes it even worse, right? Because now the institution's influenced by revenue.
Well, we knew that was the case to begin with.
And there's a quality.
That's why I liked PageRank.
One of the advertisers. That was too simplistic.
Obviously the problem is humans, and they want to, the game stuff. So, but I honored Matt Cutts' attempt to eliminate the effect of gaming on Google. That was what Matt Cutts' job was, and that I have no problem.
And now the whole world does it. Now you have entire campaigns that are run on nothing but this.
Yeah.
Now you have 8chan and 4chan and company trying to tear down institutions through this. And how many people is it? It could be 100 people, right?
Yeah.
And they're very clever about it and they're very good about it. And it's just an extension of a PR company in the old days or an ad agency, right?
Your full conclusion is you don't want those 100 people to determine what you see on the web either.
Right. Thank you. Yes. And so you've got to find a balance. You've got to adjust for them. You've got to make some. And so you're forced to. Google, here's what I'm saying. Google didn't want to be in this position. They were forced into this position.
Yeah.
If they want to deliver knowledge and a quality experience to us, they have to acknowledge. My point to them has been that they've got to be more transparent about the efforts to manipulate them and thus us. And that they have to adjust for those efforts to manipulate, and we have to be able to adjust for those efforts.
Here's the sentence that worries me, and this is once again from Ben Gomes, who's the VP of Engineering at Google, the head of search at Google.
We combine
hundreds of signals. This is really it in a nutshell.
This is the whole key. Yes, ranking is the key.
We combine hundreds of signals to determine which results we show for a given query, from the freshness of the content to the number of times your search queries appear on the page. We've adjusted our signals to help surface more authoritative pages and to demote low-quality content so that issues similar to the Holocaust denial results that we saw back in December are less likely to appear. And I just want to know, this is good, but what is authoritative and what is low-quality? Now, he says
an issue.
Part of this comes from direct feedback tools, right? He says we're going to give users a chance to help us with authority and quality.
Yeah, but that's more on the feature, which is autocomplete, which is really a different thing.
Okay, ranking, so that's not going to change. That's not going to work with
that's ranking. Not going to change ranking. Ranking is holy. And so ranking, they've got to make universal decisions that they can stick with. It's going to yield
results. Conversation about what is authoritative and what is low quality? Where is that?
So happen? I'm involved in this decision. There's going to be an announcement next week of something that I'm involved in that I won't say yet. But we have to be more transparent about the signals that various parties use to make decisions on their own and for their own reasons. So if you're an ad network, if you're an ad agency, if you're an advertiser, if you're a media company, if you're a platform, and if you're a reader, you need more signals that you can use to judge things. So for example, I'll give you a simple example, right? Age of site. If this site has only been up for 2 weeks, Procter & Gamble, do you really want to put your diapers on it? I don't know. Now, the New York Times was 2 weeks old once. 2 weeks doesn't mean it's bad. But it's a signal that tells you you might want to be cautious.
There's a really good example, because doesn't that favor incumbents?
It does, unless. And so what I'm going to argue next week is that Absolutely. And so there needs to be
Twit's brand new and you got to trust CBS.
I'm going to answer your question. So you have sets of signals and you have interpretation of them, and they're both bad signals and good signals, vice and virtue. You need a few things then. You also have people signing up to pledges of doing this and that and this and that. So you need, I think, an agency to worry about three things. To audit compliance. I made this pledge. Do I hold true to it? And that pledge is just me saying to those who care that I fact check or I do whatever. Second is appeal.
That's not gameable.
Yeah, okay, so I screwed up once. No, you need human beings. You need human beings. There's an appeal process. I have long said that Google needs a jury of advertising peers to make these decisions because Google is the voice of God. So you need appeal and you need review of a new site. Oh, this thing is only 2 weeks old, but hell, it's Nick Kristof starting a new media brand. Yeah, let him in. Now, the second part is...
Which favors incumbents.
It does to some extent.
If Edward R. Murrow starts a podcast network, he's going to be damn fine.
There needs to be a door open for new ones.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
okay.
And Leo, but this is where we're stuck.
I understand the problem, and I understand the difficulty. Here's an example with snippets. So who, or search completion, who painted the Mona Lisa, and then which predictions were inappropriate. And then, but see, notice the categories that they give you for, and I wish I could pause this GIF. The predictions, and this is why I don't like them, are hateful, sexually explicit, violent, or other. The three, hateful, sexually explicit, violent. That's an interesting choice, those three, because that reflects a current cultural point of view.
But, exactly.
But,
very true.
In France, nudity is not nearly as problematic.
But they hate violence.
But they hate violence.
That's still there.
We currently will rate a movie R for sex, but not for violence. So these kinds of systems are, I think, culturally problematic. They perpetuate the establishment, the culture in charge. And I think the risk here is the culture in charge is the Silicon Valley culture, which is, I think one could argue, a very bizarre and non-standard culture.
That's what's said about Hollywood. That's what's said about New York.
Just like
that's
Hollywood.
What's said about Washington government.
Just, yeah, yeah.
And I would, and
so
I
just
would
think
say
it's
it
risky.
About-
And that be, and it's only a deal. It's a big, it's a deal because Hollywood movies are one thing. The company that essentially controls visibility on the internet and the entire internet, it's a whole nother thing. They have even a higher responsibility, much higher responsibility than Hollywood does.
You know, people used to make that argument about Hollywood, though, that they are the influencer and arbiter of culture, not just here, but abroad. And I mean, now it's much less relevant.
It's problematic, so but it's maybe, much more problematic now with Google. It's much more problematic because it's not just Hollywood. It's not just the movie you went to see. It's your everything you do. The web is now, the internet is everything. It's where you get your information, period.
But you don't have to get it through Google. And
okay.
I mean, so that's
so
part
there,
of it.
I did mention that. There are other search engines.
And there are, yeah.
Oh, no.
About.com is going away.
I didn't know it was still around.
But it was full of gaming, right?
I consulted there for a year.
Yeah.
And the Times bought it.
I don't know. I just worry that Google has so much power. But Jeff, I do trust people like you to kind of speak truth to them. And so I think it's important that we make sure that there's room for points of view, scientific theories, ideas that don't fit the dominant culture. That's where humanity
I agree.
Grows.
And they're also testing different perspectives. They're testing other things as well, and I think they're very conscious of this. But the and Leo, all the points you raise are of course good points, and you're doing it for the sake of showing all the
yeah, because I'm a liberal and I want I firmly believe in climate change. But for the sake of argument, and the problem is, if you're not the dominant culture, it sure doesn't feel good, when the dominant culture uses these very powerful yes. tools to suppress your points of view.
Unless those points of view are wrong.
Guys, we're no, 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 No. We're not going to solve this now, but we've been talking about it for a while, and we keep. I feel like we've gone around and around a couple times.
Yeah, you're right.
We have not, but I am going to give you a chance to talk about the new Amazon Echo.
This was not just for my own selfish reasons.
No, also, but I'm excited about this too.
I want to get you a devil's advocate hat. You can put it on when you're like,
if you know the worst advocate. Thing. But I think Google needs to be devil's advocate. The reason the worst thing is for a bunch of people. Who have come from mm-hmm. white privilege or whatever point of view it is, all sitting around agreeing.
I agree.
And so it's important. It's not merely the devil's advocate. I think it's really, I'm sincere in my concern that the dominant culture not dominate the internet.
We can get a revisit of Clippy. Would you like an alternative opinion on this?
Yeah. There's got to be a way to do
you
that.
You fool you.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in more important news, now there's an Amazon Echo that will look at your style choices.
I thought this was an April Fool's joke when I saw it. I was like, no.
That was my exact tweet. Not an April Fool's joke. but it's actually telling. I don't think Amazon, look, they've made mistakes. The Amazon Fire Phone is obviously one. But I think Amazon is, Jeff Bezos is careful about his strategic moves. There's a reason.
This is super smart.
There's a reason for this. Yes. So what is it? Tell us what this thing does.
Okay, so for $200, and right now it's invite only, it's an Amazon Echo that has all the features of Madam A with a camera. And the camera, in this case, takes a picture or a video of your outfit, and it uses machine learning and recommendation algorithms to decide which one's better.
See how it blurs the background intentionally so that chair mm-hmm. doesn't distract? And so then what is style check? How does that work?
Style check is looking to say this. The computer's 64% confident that this is a better choice, this
oh
plaid
my
thing.
Oh, God. Talk so, about dominant culture.
Yeah.
Well, that's
fortunately,
no
it's a completely,
flannel for you, America.
Fashion is a completely trivial thing, so I don't mind so much. But I have to agree, the shoes are much better on the left than the right.
So this is great for Amazon because here are a couple things that I think is smart here. Okay, I called this the closet Echo, even though I would not want this in my closet.
I actually have a
camera in my closet.
I have a Dot in my closet.
Yes, but
so I can listen to news while I'm changing. But this would take its place. In fact, I got on the list immediately.
Me too, but it's a camera, so I don't think I would want the camera while I'm changing, to be honest. But so what this does is it gives Amazon a chance to understand what you're wearing, which will give it the ability to make some amazing recommendations for what you should buy next. Fashion's a big spot for Amazon. You know, clothing is still something that most people don't buy from Amazon. So that's one. And two, once it has this intelligence, think about the kinds of value-added services it can add, such as once it knows what's in my wardrobe, it can suggest outfits for me.
Oh,
it could even look
God.
At the weather and say, hey, it's going to be cold. Here, what about this? Or look at my calendar. These are the sort of – it's not doing this, but these are the sort – like the things you can do when you have information about people, we're just uncovering this, and it's going to be amazing. And Amazon's getting a leg up with understanding what the heck's in my wardrobe.
I'm going to predict. We're going to look back at this, and it's going to be the museum of dead technology.
This is another Fire Phone.
Yeah, it might be.
Yeah, because yeah. it's too limited to use.
This is huge.
There is no one standard opinion and taste.
Jeff, just go to YouTube. And look up what do they call those videos, Stacey? The style, you know, the shopping.
Hey, Jeff,
social.
Swag,
I get this for social.
Swag
bag. No. It's not swag bag. It's it's the shopping videos.
Yeah.
Hall videos.
Hall that's
videos.
The word.
That's it. So
huge.
Jeff, have you ever been on Polyvore?
Huge.
Polyvore is.
This works for social. It doesn't work for Amazon telling you what to do.
Trust me. If Amazon's good at this, it will be amazing. And there is so much interest among the non-technorati about style and your outfits. And here's a haul video.
I'm going to show. I'll turn off the audio. This is Zoella. She's been shopping. Zoella's been shopping, and she's going to, actually, Jeff, this is your worst nightmare and every husband's worst nightmare. She is going to now force us to sit in a chair and look at her, show everything she bought at her shopping haul. Jeff, how many views do you think on this video? Well, you can see it. 1.5 million.
That's what I'm saying. This is social. This isn't the computer telling you what to wear. With one view from the institution.
That's social.
I get that.
I think this is exactly what Amazon wants to do with this.
This is trained. It's a machine learning algorithm. They're training it against these videos. Actually, I don't know what they're training it against.
Well, they're clearly collecting information, right? In much the same way Google Photos is collecting. I mean, you know, Amazon's not stupid. Your machine learning, it eats data. I think this is huge. They'll sell a million of these in the first year.
Oh, it's Jeff, a gimmick, but I don't think it'll be around long.
What if you sell a million? That's $200 million, Jeff.
Well, but it's not. It's a style thing.
Go ahead.
I take pictures and I send of my outfits, like before I go on stage or something. Like if I'm picking my wardrobe, I send pictures to my friends. There are dozens of apps where you can. There are dozens of apps where you can send it to strangers. I can't think of the app's name right now, but there's, still if I don't have people. A friend I want to bother,
yes.
I can send it to them.
Yes.
Still people.
This could be people. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they tie this into stylists. In fact, they say Style Check combines machine learning algorithms with advice from fashion specialists. The only threat to this is the price, which is $200. I think if this were
half. But it's also an Echo.
Yeah.
It does everything the Echo does.
Well, does it have speakers?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think it's more like a Dot with a camera. I mean, it probably needs to be that expensive because it's got a camera.
Cameras are expensive.
Yeah. And it's got LED lighting and it's got algorithms in it to blur the background.
Let's go play my getting ready playlist.
Yeah.
Jeff, you just got a lot of people really mad.
I'm sorry.
But also imagine saying, hey, Echo.
I didn't say Google.
No, say, hey, Echo, after a year of using this, what should I wear today? And Echo checks the weather, checks your calendar, and says, I've got just something right for you. Go to...
Solution looking for a problem. That's why we have Windows.
Jeff, I cannot tell you how much brain power I spend thinking about what to wear. I'm not kidding. This is why uniforms are so big in schools. This is why... I mean, think about how many productivity hacks involve buying the same clothes.
You ever hear of Garanimals, Jeff? 100 Garanimals. Wait a minute. 149.
By the way, I think it's Geranimals. It's a GIF thing. I think it's Geranimals, not Garanimals.
149 employees, an annual revenue of $11.9 million for clothes that have a tag that say, with this bottom, wear this top.
So I'm giggling imagining this thing in Mark Zuckerberg's closet.
I think all he has is gray hoodies, right?
That's what I'm saying. Oh, they're gray t-shirts. Yeah. All right. We'll do a long betting.
You want to see the president of Garanimals' $4.75 million Florida home that's now available in Sarasota for this is the house that Garanimals built. No, wow.
Garanimals.
All right. Is it Jurga? It's what? I think Carson and I, both, by the way, Ivy League educated, say that it's Garanimals. Look at this house.
Okay,
this is the
Google.
House Garanimals built.
How do you pronounce Garanimals?
That's pronounced Garanimal.
Okay, Google. How do you pronounce Geranimals?
That's pronounced Geranimals.
That's Google for you right there. Won't take a position. Whatever you say, Jeff, is like, absolutely
That's neutral.
Wow, I want to buy this house that Garanimals built, but I'm afraid I haven't figured out a way to get people matching their clothing. Wow. Okay.
I don't know.
Sorry.
I'm excited about this. I can't wait to try it.
I am too.
Hopefully.
I am too. Not because I need fashion help, as you can see. I'm
very fashionable.
But because Jeff, I think it's cool. I think it's an interesting idea.
If I get one, I will pair last season's shoes with like... 4 seasons ago's clothing, and I'll be like, what do you think? And if it likes it, I'm going to be like, you're wrong. You're so wrong. And
I'm just saying, as Wave was to Gina,
maybe
is to you.
Maybe. The Echo look, available, well, only by invitation, but both Stacy and I have applied.
Fingers Fingers crossed.
If selected, you'll receive an email with an invitation to purchase. What
is that's this? How the Echo was.
Yes. Isn't Amazon brilliant?
Yes.
I am so begging for the right to give them $200.
I know.
Exactly.
Please.
And to stand in lines.
Brilliant. Let's take a break. When we come back, there's more to talk about. I'm sure we can find more controversial and uncontroversial topics. I like that fake news story. And I'm sorry that I'm such a curmudgeon on that one, but I worry.
No, no, it's your job.
I worry about the future. I worry about the children. Think of the children. That's all I say.
You want to know something? You know what? I learned two other fascinating things from David Kenney. One, they had Watson write headlines for the Weather Channel.
Yeah.
And guess what? It was the absolute worst at clickbait because the reward system was traffic. It used every trick there was in the book. You won't believe what's going to happen when you click on this. Two, you'll never believe who has an artificial intelligence department staffed with scientists.
We'll find out.
The Vatican.
Oh, wow. Well, you saw the Pope spoke at TED.
Yeah.
Which is wild. He didn't come. He didn't deign to go to Vancouver for it, but he spoke via Skype.
Did they make him stand on a red dot?
The Vatican's very hip.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Google Home can turn you into a sous chef? I like that.
Or yes.
Yeah, stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Sorry, Stacey just got excited.
I know, I'm excited too. Stacey and I actually
are
both 14-year-old girls. Yeah. Why is it so hard to get a Google Pixel? Facebook, another tragedy. Is it Facebook's fault? And Twitter, is it the Trump bump? Stay tuned. Our show today brought to you by a great company making a big difference. I'd use Box. Everybody's used Box, right? Box.com. But I hadn't used it in a while. And when I went back and tried it, I went, wow, this is not your father's box. Doesn't sound quite right. But what it is the best way to bring people and ideas together so businesses can work as one. Centralize your files. Keep your team on track with Box. It provides a single place to edit. Yes, edit. The Box plugin ecosystem is amazing to comment, to share, to approve files. This is great for a law office that wants to share documents securely, for a doctor that wants to share patient records securely, because Box meets your organization's content governance and compliance standards. It's HIPAA compliant. It's FINRA compliant, FIPS and FedRAMP compliant. You can solve data residency requirements because they will offer storage all over the world, and you could pick the place. You've got complete permissions on the files you share. You could set expiration dates. You can secure files. You can get this. If you've got an employee using Box, you can and you fire them, you can remotely log them out and delete the Box data. You lose a device. You can log it out, delete your data. You have total control. No more email attachments. This is a big one for me. If you can get the people in your company to stop opening email attachments, you will save yourself a lot of heartache from things like ransomware. Instead, securely share large files using a link or a custom URL with Box.com. Box, always, you know, you're always going to have the latest version on hand. You can preview 120 different file types, huge number of file types, of course, PDF, but also, for instance, Photoshop, PSD, without downloading the file. It just shows you a preview. Real-time notifications, if you want, when edits are made. Box will save earlier versions. Look at the integrations. Box has a great API, but also integrates with everything else. More than 41 million users, 59,000 businesses. I got the Box religion. I started playing with it. I said, wow. I've had a Box account forever. But, man, this thing, this Box is so incredible. Work as one with Box.com. We got a free 2-week trial so you too can see the new Box. This ain't your daddy's Box. Box.com. Work as one is a great motto. It is awesome. I now have Box synchronizing to every workstation I have. Just fantastic. We're talking about Google, Facebook, news, Amazon.
And fashion.
Wait, don't put a sneer in your voice, in your tone there, Jeff.
I did not. Stacy, I worked for 12 years at Condé Nast.
Oh, he knows fashion.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, but which part of Condé Nast?
Well, I didn't learn anything.
You got the geek part of Condé Nast.
No, I had to, when I worked there, I called my boss suits protective coloration.
Were they all blue serge?
Well, no, you did show.
You pick. You guys pick. I don't want to dominate here.
I picked the last story, Jeff.
What is it?
What last story?
I picked the Google or the.
It's Jeff's turn. I see.
Yeah,
you picked the Amazon Echo.
Oh, I see.
Thank you.
Well, this has been a little bit self-serving.
Yeah.
Jimmy Wales announced.
I'm excited. Tribute. Are you involved with this?
I'm an advisor.
I jumped for joy because Wikipedia. Jimmy Wales, of course, created Wikipedia. He's now creating Wiki Tribune. What's the point, Jeff?
So the point is a few things. One is that, and it's going to be a changeable beast. So I'm probably projecting my wishes on it more than reality. What I want out of this is that we have this constant flow of news, updates, breaking news, everything else. And I want a place where I can go and say, what do we know about blank? An updated repository. Jimmy also wants this to be he wants to bring over some of the culture. This is going to be hard from Wikipedia of collaboration, number one, and also of NPOB, of neutral point of view, of fact-based and things that have that show their work and that are transparent. And you know what changes are made and why by whom. He's going to have professional journalists working alongside volunteers.
Contrast this to my point of view on the Google's attempt to, you know, get search fixed. This is exactly the response I'd love to see. First of all, it's one site. It's not dominating the net. But it gives people a place they can go. It's community supported. It's a news platform, but fact-focused, fact-oriented, evidence-based journalism is the tagline they're using. And because it's like Wikipedia, it's people. It's made people are involved. And somebody, I think it might have been you, Jeff, said the reason that journalists hate this is because community and journalists are equals. That kind of might scare.
That's true.
Somebody said that, yeah.
I visited Jimmy when he was about to do a weekend test where he hired journalists and volunteers, hired people to play the roles, and covered news for a weekend. He thinks Wiki software is not easy enough to use, and there were different functionalities, so he's building on top of existing platforms, but building an easier-to-use platform to do this. And I'm enthused. It's a for-profit company. He's trying to get as much patronage as possible to use as little advertising as possible. That's not closing the door on advertising. I think some may be necessary, but if you don't totally depend upon advertising, then the reward structures are not clickbait.
So are they going to monetize, so it says, with subscriptions?
Yeah, so it's a patronage. It's all going to be free in access. It's going to be like public media in the U.S.
But I can become a supporter.
Society can have it.
Yeah, I want to definitely become
a supporter.
Supporter
at various levels.
I'm a supporter of Wikipedia. I give Wikipedia a monthly contribution, but this is just as good an idea, I think. So he's hired journalists.
Stacey, your turn.
He's hired 3 out of the 10 that they want to hire, according to the webpage. What do you think, Stacey? I mean, you're a journalist. What do you think?
I think it's a good idea. As a journalist, okay, this is just going to come out wrong, so I'm just going to say it. I think in some ways I am a common or like a general community member isn't necessarily as knowledgeable as I am about some things. Not everything. But so
well, that's why they're journalists too. I mean, it's
right.
Wikipedia is created in fact, it's interesting because Wikipedia doesn't have a lot of experts. I don't know. Actually, I shouldn't say that.
Well,
Wikipedia is entirely by volunteers. Whoever says I want to write an article, and it somehow manages to. It's not the sole version of truth, but work towards truth.
It does
in a beautiful way.
I would love them to, I want to see this in action, like something like net neutrality, which hey, it's back. I think that would be like a real, I want to see them cover something like that, as opposed to like there was a shooting and X number of people were killed,
I
which feels
agree more.
So or, I think it's a great idea. I just want to see
what's the latest on Trump and Russia.
Yeah.
You know, give me what we know and don't know about Trump and Russia. And don't force me to go through 87 articles to figure out where the hell are we?
Because, I mean, making meaning out of what's happening in the world is tough. And especially right now, and it's so complicated. And the more meaning you try to put in a story, the more context you put into a story, the more dangerous, and I won't say the further from the truth, but the more risk you run of people saying, what? No, that's not my meaning. And it's because people tell their own stories and make their own stories. And I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I mean, and so it's funny because this contrasts us with our earlier conversation. This is, but because it's just one source, you can still go read the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Breitbart, whatever you want to read. This is one source. I think this is a very interesting experiment, and maybe it'll be a flop. I mean, if before Wikipedia, if you had said, we're going to make an encyclopedia of all the world's knowledge edited by volunteers who have free access from anywhere in the internet, would you have said, that'll work?
I mean, I remember a conference at Harvard where Jimmy Wales faced Jill Abramson, who was then a number two editor at the Times. And she said, you don't understand how much it costs to have a Baghdad bureau. And Jimmy said, I don't care. The world doesn't care. The market doesn't care. Who would have thought that volunteers could replace Encyclopedia Britannica? Now, on the other hand, the cautionary tale. Do you remember the Wikitorial in the LA Times?
No.
So they not too wisely decided to do an editorial and to, hey, this is a crowd thing. Let's make it into a wiki. So they took an editorial about the Iraq War and then opened it up. And it took no time at all for, of course, it
well, of
to
course.
Become its own war zone. And I blogged at the time. This is going back many years now. I blogged at the time and I said, no. You should have had one from column A, one from column B, two from perspectives, and each one should do its best job to argue. This is an editorial, so it's not fact-based. It's opinion-based. And show me the two perspectives argued to their best. And Jimmy Wales happened to see that at the time. And he said, you're right. You'll have to come and they should fork it. And he tried to get to the LA Times to say, no, guys, fork this thing, but it was too late. It was such a disaster.
I think the key to Wikipedia is the talk page and the fact that you can see all edits made and you can see the debate right. over the talk, the editors, the volunteers. There's a small percentage of people who really spend a lot of time on it. But for whatever reason, in fact, really, I mean, if you want to know about net neutrality, isn't the first place you'd go Wikipedia?
That's overwhelming.
When there's breaking news.
Well, yes.
When there's breaking news, I go to Wikipedia. Do you, Stacey, exactly. use
Who
Wikipedia for research?
Case.
I bet you do.
I like, especially the technical topics, like semiconductor design discussions. Yeah. And like, if I encounter some weird spectrum thing, I'm like, oh, what's this? I'll go there. It's better there. I don't go for things like net neutrality, even though they can do a really good job of covering like the historical
I think
aspects.
This actually is really good, this net neutrality conversation. And the other thing I like is you can see all the references, article after. Mm-hmm. So this is a starting point. And it really bugs me when I see schools say, and you may not use Wikipedia because it's better than the Encyclopedia Britannica.
So my daughter's school says she can use Wikipedia, and they good. Even say it as a source, but they actually talk about where to go to see controversial things and how to recognize gamed pages.
Of course, you need that too. Although Wikipedia is surprisingly not gamed, given how open it is. It's always amazes me.
People, I mean, it's gamed for a few moments and then it's ungamed.
Yes, it's not gamed long term usually. Like if I go to Hillary Clinton, I wonder, there's going to be a lot of factual stuff. And of course, at some point, somebody will put something bad in, but that there are people who watch over it. I think these are really kind of amazing. I'll tell you, it's not a day they goes are. By that I don't refer to Wikipedia. And so,
if you go back to our Google discussion, one of the arguments that I've made is that you need to look at the things where there's fake controversy created. There's so it's not how many coats of shellac do you put on wood. It's climate change real? And to me, the data to use for that, the easiest day is to look at those pages on Wikipedia which have to be shut down.
Yeah, you know, I would guess the climate change page is locked down.
Or vaccines.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
But see, they have a vaccine page, but then they also have a page called Vaccine Controversy. And that's where...
To acknowledge the controversy is fine.
Yeah, that's where the debate goes. And then if you go to adverse effects, which is where you would expect anti-vaccine advocates to get involved, this looks, I mean, like pretty accurate.
It looks like the CDC stuff.
Yeah. And yet if you go to Vaccine Controversy, you will then see all the stuff. And that's exactly how it should be handled, don't you think? This is, I mean, I only say this to say, Jimmy seems to understand, and Jimmy and his team, I'm sure Jimmy doesn't that involve, I don't know how involved he is in Wikipedia these days.
Oh, Jimmy's going to be very involved. He's going to be the, I think he's going to be the editor to start.
Good. Because I think he gets it. And
he does.
I expect to check Wiki Tribune for news, at maybe my first stop, in the same way that Wikipedia is my first stop for factual information.
But I very much agree with my esteemed fellow panelist that covering a fire or a shooting or that kind of stuff is not what we will have plenty of that. There's breaking news everywhere. Taking these ongoing complex stories. But I wish it would start with a test. I told him this. He's not going to do this. I would just like to start with a test of this that's just the latest on Trump. What we know about Trump. What his policies are, what he's said, connections to Russia, and so on. That would be a test of this thing. If you can pull that off without the world tearing you apart, if you can be a useful resource that people can look up and see what's going on, you've passed an acid test.
Yeah. So the idea is you'll have reporters and then you'll have the community. By the way, look at the bottom of the page. There's,
oh, hey, Jeff.
There's a picture of somebody we know. Advisors include Gaia Kawasaki, Jeff Jarvis, and Lily Cole. Who's Lily Cole? I don't know who Lily Cole is.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We haven't had a committee meeting.
I think this is good for Jimmy. I mean, this is a very Jimmy way to address this fake news controversy. Be interesting to see.
She's
how
an
works.
English model, actress, and entrepreneur.
Great.
What?
Jimmy's a strange fellow in some respects. Okay, you know, I don't know what the story is there, but
nothing wrong. I
became a supporter.
Now the question is, will she have the Amazon look in her closet?
She's a model. She ought to. Right?
No, they go their own
environmental,
way.
Okay, here's why. Environmental campaigning and business activities.
Right. Right. And you know what?
She's an advisor to Wiki. Well, it's already, this is great. Already in her Wiki profile is that she's an advisor to Wiki Tribune.
That's the other thing that's amazing about Wikipedia.
I love how fast Wikipedia is. I see somebody may have died, and I'm like, Wikipedia, tell me.
And who would have guessed that?
I know.
Right? Who would have guessed that was the use exactly. to which it would be put?
Well, but who would have guessed it would work? And would continue to work after all these years and not turn into 4chan or Reddit or something.
So she started an altruism-based social network called impossible.com, which invites people to give their services and skills
impossible.
Away to help others.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's great. So she's
neat.
So the notion of altruism and helping out and volunteering is core to this. A smart get, as I would expect.
But they are hiring actual journalists, and the idea is they just take the news stories of the day and report them? Okay.
And then I don't think that's what it is. I think it's all the stories of the day. I don't think they're going to be comprehensive.
But then their articles obviously will be put here and then copy edited, by the way. Because there's a role for grammar whizzes.
Grammar whizzes. I love that. I can't wait to see the Oxford and Serial comma debates.
And you know you're Oxford forever. And you know you're going to find there's plenty of unemployed frustrated copy editors out there. They'll volunteer like crazy.
Oh, I hear from them all the time.
In a way, it's rolling the comments into the story. In a way, right? That's right now.
Yeah.
Some authority writes the story, and then the comments supplement it. But if you could, in a responsible, well done way, add that content back in, that might be very interesting. All right. Well, watch for it. Wikitribune.com. He says if he doesn't get enough support, if he doesn't get 10 journalists, he's a third of the way there. He'll refund everybody's money. 28 days to go, so it's kind of crowdsourced. 6,306 supporters. He doesn't say how much he's raised at this point. Just that he's got 3 out of 10 journalists hired.
Yeah, for the so it got swamped at first, and the contribution thing didn't work at first. So if you did try to contribute, and you couldn't, go back.
And let's all make a pledge to contribute after it starts with content, like help out, because these things are better if we all help out. So Google's doing virtual reality field trips.
Wait,
go ahead.
Haven't they done this before? My daughter, that's her, like, she knew what Google Cardboard was way at the beginning because she went on virtual field trips.
Oh, but now it's available to everyone.
Oh, okay.
So you can install Expeditions on your phone and participate. And one of them, the reason this caught my eye, is Hamilton. So my favorite thing in the world.
Is it really?
So one of my favorite things.
I was like.
Yeah, no, I also like spaghetti with meatballs. No, Hamilton, in fact, we just saw it in San Francisco. That's what's on my mind, because I'd seen it in New York.
You saw it again?
Lisa, we almost saw it again, like, tomorrow.
How much were the tickets in San Francisco?
I think, you know, I subscribed to the series, so I think they're $100. I don't know if there's...
One day it'll come to Austin.
There's active scalping. Yeah, this is a tour, so it is.
Yeah.
How was the quality of the production?
Well, it's not New York. But it was very good. The Hamilton was had performed in New York. He was an understudy for Hamilton in New York. The Angela, same thing. They're a very talented cast. There's just something about Broadway that is just, you know, it's hard to describe, but it's just a little bit better. But it's a brilliant show. And I just seeing it is always great to see it. It's just an amazing show.
I also saw, I walked by a theater the other day, 1984 as a play.
Yes. Yes, 1984 really has had a resurgence in the last year. I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know else who's had a resurgence this last year? Twitter. In fact, the stock market thought Twitter would make 1 cent earning per share. That was the analyst consensus. It made 11. Better than expected earnings after several quarters of disappointing results. Revenue better than expected, still declining, $548 million. Monthly active users, 7 million more than expected, 328 million. So growth, but it's got to be, I think the consensus is it's because our president uses it.
So I was talking to a brand manager at a large Fortune 500 company, and we were talking about different social media stuff, and she's like, yeah, everyone's like, get your brand off Twitter. It's nothing's there. Snapchat, Instagram. But now... The word on the street is, we all got to go back to Twitter.
Wow.
So now they're back to Twitter.
I'm back on Twitter.
Oh, Lord. How long?
For how long? That's a good question. It's a love-hate thing. I'm just observing. Weird freak out. Google's peripherally related to this. There was a New York Times article about Uber on Sunday. Actually, it wasn't even about Uber. It was a profile of Travis Kalanick.
Such a good... Mike Isaacs did such a great job with that profile.
Yeah. But for the geeks reading between the lines, there were two very interesting tidbits in here. I do recommend it. It's really a profile of Kalanick. But it starts off... with a little anecdote about Kalanick. Apparently, he had pulled a fast one on Apple by telling his employees to help camouflage Uber's app from Apple's engineers because Uber had been violating Apple rules, secretly tagging iPhones to keep track of them even after the app was deleted. That is a strict violation of Apple's privacy guidelines. Apple caught on. The way they prevented it was with that tool Grayball that they were using to keep... authorities from using Uber. They geofenced Cupertino so that the feature of the app that extracted the phone's serial number wouldn't work in Cupertino. But what they didn't realize is that Apple has employees all over the place. They thought all of the apps were reviewed in Cupertino. Tim Cook called him in and said, "So I heard you've been breaking some of our rules." Mr. Cook then demanded, "Stop the trickery or we'll kick you out of the app store." Of course, Apple didn't, you know, Apple with anybody else would have kicked them out of the App Store and never let them back in. But it's Uber. So they didn't. A little. Now you knock it off, you bad boy, you. And of course, Uber says they knocked it off. What they were doing is keep, and actually they did it for a legitimate business reason, not to spy on us, but because Uber drivers, particularly in India, I understand, were buying extra phones. They were getting rewarded for the number of rides they accepted, just period, they accepted. So they were buying like 100 old iPhones, putting the app on them and accepting rides to bonus themselves. And so the whole idea was, well, we'll now know because we've seen this phone before, we'll know from this ID that this is bogus. That this is a resold phone and it's not, you know, or something. So that was revelation number one. Interesting to Apple fans was that Apple has kind of a double standard when it comes to Uber. And also interested because Apple has never said, and probably should have, oh, you know that Uber app that was spying on you.
Right.
Didn't mention that. But then the other thing we learned way down at the bottom of the story, Mike Isaac, this was well-researched, was that Uber had been buying information about competitors. Of course, every company, not every, but many companies do competitive research. Big companies do. But what's interesting is where they were getting this information. So I've used and I even have recommended a service called Unroll.me, Unroll.me, which is great. You use it. Well, it was great until I found out what they were doing. You use it to get, in fact, I think I recommended on this show to sign off of newsletters and mailing lists that you don't want to be on. Does it automatically. It'll create a digest of the stuff. Delete it from your inbox if you want. But it turns out Unroll.me, which was a free service, we maybe should have asked a little bit more about how they monetized. They said in the early days, oh, we'll put an ad in the digest we send you. But no, in fact, they were collecting all your Gmail, going through it, looking for things like, oh, I don't know, Lyft receipts, and then selling that information anonymized, they say, to Uber. I think a lot of people unroll me when they heard this. But I guess we should have known. Unroll me wrote a blog post that was founder of Unroll Me saying he was heartbroken. It's heartbroken. We can do better. I'm heartbroken that you found out what we were up to.
This is bored.
So this is one of those things where, again, when you sign up for a free service, you are the product. And I saw this and I was like, people are going to have a fit about this. And I was kind of, but I was a little shruggy about it too. But one of my people I follow on Twitter, she said, you know, a lot of people don't think about the trials and tribulations that come with being a free-based service. And she was wondering how many entrepreneurs would start a company based on a free service, right, knowing now what they know, or knowing what they know now.
Some do. There's a lot of in Silicon Valley. We're going to scale it and figure out how to monetize it later. I mean, Twitter is famous for that, right?
They're doing a great job, actually, better.
Here's the thing. Gmail does the same thing. Everybody knows Gmail. Mm-hmm. Google looks at your mail, right? But what they do with it, what they look at is they don't sell it to a third party. They use keywords to put advertising in your feed, targeted advertising. And people, I think, most people know that that's what goes on. And as long as you're not selling it to a third party, I don't think that, you know, most people are bothered by that. Those who are don't use Gmail.
Your Fitbit data is sold to a third party.
But see, that's kind of the thing is I think people, yes, now we need to really think harder. If it's sold to a third party, like, well, the Lyft receipts, but what else is being sold to a third? What other email tidbits are being sold to a third party? And the other thing we know is that anonymizing doesn't work. We've seen time and time again, so-called anonymized data de-anonymized easily.
Right. This is a huge thing that I've been talking about for years, and people like free.
There's different. I mean, Gmail is okay, right? I mean, it's okay with me anyway.
Gmail is fine by me,
but they don't sell it.
It's not just because they don't sell it; they're also building like products on it that I think are interesting. But I didn't put my photos in Google Photos for a long time because that was a step too far for me. So, I mean, everybody has.
But you did now.
It was accidental, stupid phone.
Well, there's so much value I get out of Google Photos. And again, oh, yeah. Google does give you control of this. And I know they're honest, and I think they're explicit in what they do with it. And it doesn't sound like they're scanning your photos looking for stuff they can sell to a third party.
No, but they do now have an image of my daughter, like, and all of my friends, and they know who I hang out with and where I hang out with them.
Yeah.
And that's...
Maybe you don't want that. I can understand
that's
that.
That's really personal.
Yeah. But you don't mind them seeing your fashion, Amazon seeing your fashion choices?
No.
We all have our bar, right? There's a line beyond which we will not go. Slice, which owns Unroll Me, in fact, bought Unroll Me apparently for this information. I was using the Slice app. I wasn't using Unroll Me. Well, actually, I think I was, but not recently. But Slice is a great service because it gets all your receipts and tells you when something's on its way and so forth. But now I immediately deleted my Slice account because I realized, oh, they're selling it to other people, including Uber.
Well, they also tell you like how much you spend on like Uber in a year and that sort of thing, right?
It's really useful. If they kept it to themselves, yeah, I'd have no problem with it. I trust Slice, but the problem is
why do you care that Uber can buy how many? I mean, they're not marketing to you. They're just getting competitive. I mean, is this really a huge issue?
No.
I mean, get past the icky factor. Like, you're like, what? That's happening?
The problem is, of course, Uber. Because I don't trust Uber as far as I can throw them. So, I mean, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to come up with ugly Uber scenarios. We know they have a God mode, for instance, that they could tell you where they could say, hey, look, there's where Leo is. They could track you around with that. Well, now if they also know my Lyft account, I mean, how many things are they was sold to Uber? Do they know everything? Is Uber tracking my every move? Are they going to start, sending me solicitations? Say, hey, we see you're going to the prom tomorrow. Let's get an Uber for you. How long before they start showing up? An Uber driver starts showing up with a card that says Leo Laporte at the airport because they know I'm arriving. You know, I could just see all sorts of scenarios that would not be savory.
So this is really like, I think Uber, for whatever reasons, and any company that's not thinking about user trust is being super short-sighted, because we're moving into this era where they're going to have A, more information, but B, we're going to have automated transactions and relationships with them. So like, if you sign up for Amazon Dash fulfillment on a product, right, you're trusting that it's measuring accurately, it's not trying to like cheat you out of a few extra, you know, filters for your Brita, right? Or something like that, right? I would never expect Google to treat me, or not Google, I would never expect Uber to treat me fairly if it had automatic access to my credit card and was in charge of saying, like, I don't know, when my ride should. Actually, a good example is I always feel like it's telling me I've gotten my ride a little too early, even though the car isn't there yet and I'm not actually in the car. But that aside, we're moving to this era where the trust your brand has is going to be really important and essential. Like, I trust Amazon with my data because Amazon doesn't sell it. They're going to recommend products to me, but that's about it. And they're going to protect it from authorities who come seeking it. So, I don't know. Just going forward, that's kind of how I've been thinking.
Jeff, Google doesn't sell my information to a third party, do they?
No, it ends up, you know, others benefit. So when I had this conversation in the Digital News Initiative, where at the beginning of the conversation about giving data to media, they're very cautious about, Google executives said to the room of media people, the best way to make use of Google's data is to use Google's advertising services.
Yeah.
And so you do get the benefit of it, but you don't get the data on your own to do something with. And there are ways to pass data on in cohorts that make it anonymized and make it and allow others to give people valuable services.
Well, I think what we need to do, the information needs to be given to us clearly, and then we each individual needs to decide what's okay, what's not okay. I'm okay with Google collecting information for internal use only. I'm not crazy about Fitbit sending my workout information to third parties.
This is exactly what the terms of service are. It's just nobody reads them.
Right.
I mean, Fitbit.
Well, but they're also not written to be clear. I mean, I really think, for instance, Unroll Me needs to say when you sign up, and by the way, this is what's going to happen to the other things we see in your Gmail. The reason they don't is they know that people would say, oh, that's it. I'm not signing up. They like it that it's obscure, written in legalese, And I, you know, if you read the terms, they're not immediately clear what they're going to do. What they need to do is say, and I wish we could say to the FTC, hey, you guys got to regulate this, and you got to make sure that there's some rules about disclosure so that it's easily understood by a normal person what you're planning to do.
So the FTC in 2015 put out a report, I think it was November 2015, that talked about what people should do with data. And DC read the report, and the FTC called on Congress to make rules about this because the FTC currently doesn't have rules that
interesting.
Work on. So if you look at the recommendations in that report, you will just be dismayed by the fact that even the FTC is like, guys, we should really look at this and do better here, and we're not. And Congress is like, punt, no, election season. And I guarantee we're not going to deal with it now.
No. Speaking of which, Ajit Pai, the new chairman of the FCC, spoke at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention today and announced we're going to roll back net neutrality May 18th. Just to let you know. At issue, of course.
Didn't you have a devil's advocate session, which I know you do on the show, to have discussion? Didn't you have a devil's advocate session?
No, I didn't. But what I did is I explained the conservative point of view here. Don't agree with it. What they're going to do is they're going to roll back, or they're going to try to roll back, the reclassification of internet service providers as common carriers under Title II. That provided the FCC with the regulatory cover that they needed to prohibit ISPs from blocking or throttling traffic. FCC said, we're not going to use some of the other, you know, Title II also allows them, for instance, to set rates. We're not going to do any of that other stuff. But we are going to do that. And that was because they were told by a court, that's the only way you can do this legally. And so one of the points I made is that the FCC can only do what Congress explicitly allows them to do. That one could make the case that Title II is kind of bending the Telecommunications Act to do what you want to do. And I would prefer, and I think most would prefer, more specific guidance from Congress. I think that's what Pai's point is. Well, what we want is Congress to really say how ISPs should be regulated. Now, I do believe that ISPs are, you know, utilities in a way that Google and Facebook are not, and that your privacy does need to be regulated and protected by the government. That's the only way it's going to happen.
Wait, net neutrality isn't about privacy. So even
I'm sorry, not privacy. Yes.
I was like, wait.
Thank you for the correction. Although this is kind of intermingled with the privacy rules,
it
right?
It is, but so, I was like, don't, you jumped.
Apologies. Yes, yeah, obviously yeah, we're talking not about that, but about prioritizing traffic on the internet.
Yes.
And things like zero rating and this is that picking incumbents thing where, you know, a company would say, well, we don't like you, Netflix, but we happen to love Comcast's service. And so we're going to make sure everybody can get Streamcast and not at no bandwidth cost to them. But Comcast, you're going to have to pay. So the FCC has scheduled a vote, notice of proposed rulemaking for May 18th, which seeks comment and would lead to a final vote. So this is the same situation that happened with the previous vote. Remember, Tom Wheeler kind of
started back in 2008, I think it was, with Julius Genachowski, his NPRM that started the ball rolling on net neutrality regulation from the get-go. And then Wheeler came back because Genachowski stuff was refused by the court.
Right.
And that took years.
Right. And then Wheeler asked for comment. Millions of comments from people like you and me convinced him that net neutrality and Title II was the right way to go. He was really on the fence when he put out the request. But all of those comments convinced him that the right thing to do was Title II. He went Title II. So now I think once this May 18th vote happens, it's going to be incumbent on all of us to once again go back to the FCC and comment. Pai is going to conservative groups saying, look, there's going to be a grassroots movement against this. You guys need to activate in favor of it. So we'll see that.
And this, everybody, this is a long process. So an NPRM, they put that out. Then you've got the comment period that's usually like 90 days. And then they will usually come back with revised rules and that sort of thing. Then it goes to a vote, and then there's another response to the comment period. And this is long.
The thing I saw a tweet today that really I took to heart because it's corrected a way I've just used to describe this. This is not government regulation of the internet. This is government regulation of private companies called ISPs, and they should be regulated. The internet does not need to be regulated. ISPs need to be prevented from breaking the internet.
Well, I like that. Well, that's a good way to express it.
It is not. I mistakenly, and others have done this too, described it as regulating the internet. It is not.
I've never described it as regulating the internet.
No, it's regulating ISPs. No, you're smart, and I'm dumb, and I now stand corrected.
So do you think that Silicon Valley, if they're not too busy affecting the morals and cultural worldview of the world now, will they step up and fight this again?
Yes.
So no.
Hard.
So in Washington, I've talked to people who care about this fairly desperately. Both public interest groups and people who historically have worked for some of the big firms that cared about this the last time around. And most of them have bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be a regulatory priority for them. Yeah. Oof. So there's the bad news.
So the Internet Association.
Alexis Ohanian, we're putting up the bat signal.
Yeah. Yeah, Alexis.
He's about to have, a new baby?
Yeah, but he was very involved last time, remember.
Hmm?
The Internet Association, which is the lobbying group for Amazon, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Netflix, are apparently concerned. I hope that they will step up. Ed Markey from Massachusetts, Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut, Ron Wyden of Oregon.
Markey is already, he's already active. issuing very strong statements.
Yep. Those are three great senators who need our support. You should write your member of Congress because Congress does have something to say about this, ultimately. Electronic Frontier.
I once yelled at Ed Markey on TV.
Really?
This is what we discussed earlier. Because he was supporting the V-chip. And I feared
the V-chip was going to
result in what you fear Google's path to quality will result in.
And there is right now only one Democratic commissioner on the FCC. That will be righted as soon as all those other people get appointed. there's a bit of a backlog, I guess. But Mignon Clyburn, who is the remaining Democratic commissioner, is very active in this. She's going to have a press conference. She's probably having it right now to discuss her support for these rules. So battle lines are being drawn. Ajit Pai at NAB has said, yep. We're going to do it. We're going to start May 18th. So pay attention. And
again.
You know what? We can do this as many times as we need to. This is important.
We're going to have to.
Never mind. I'm not ready for this.
All ready for this? Did you get your false 5G network in Austin set up?
Oh, no, I did not. I'm like, AT&T.
AT&T.
Hey, you know what? They've been marketing the heck out of 5G has been this amorphous marketing term forever. So
I have a Galaxy S8. I should come down and see you sometime. Engadget called it a faux 5G network or pre-standard. If you have a Galaxy S8, you can get speeds that should leave LTE in the dust. Downloads twice as fast on average, according to AT&T. Indianapolis next. Atlanta, Boston, Chicago, L.A., Nashville, and San Francisco slated for this year. It's weird that you have to use a Samsung device. Is that a technical issue? It must be. It's the frequencies?
I was about to say it's your frequencies, and it depends on how they're doing their speeds. And I didn't have time to look at what AT&T's doing here. But some of the things they use to make faster speeds, you need it on the handset device side and on the tower side.
Right. Well, good. I'm glad I have an S8. Although, after a week with it, I'm going back to the Pixel. The Pixel is still the best Android phone out there.
Oh, okay.
Phone. I heard you saying before at the end of the last show that you're thinking about buying another one, buying the larger one.
Yeah. Because I do miss, I like the screen real estate. I have the small Pixel, and I like the screen real estate. You use the XL, right, Jeff, or no?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's clunky looking, it's functional.
So my Pixel C, which I love.
Your tablet.
Your Chromebook?
Almost died tablet. Last night.
Oh, no.
So, and I found out this is a known issue for almost a year. They haven't fixed it, and that's very irritating. So I had a finger unlock, right?
Yeah.
And to boot, it worked fine. And then when you then went in on the security level to get in, wrong pattern. I just used the same pattern. The pattern works. I did it again and again. I rebooted. Nothing. Look it up. Known issue with the Pixel C, and fear of this or some isolated rumors of cases happening on this on the Pixel phone. And it's been unfixed. So I had no choice but to wipe the tablet. And then it's okay now, and I'm now using a number instead.
Yeah, well, you always have a backup number, right? You could have used that.
No.
No?
It wouldn't take the pattern, so there was no way to get in.
Oh, no, there must have been something you could press.
No, there's no way to get in.
Try another method. No?
Jeff is like, I looked on the forums.
Oh, that sucks.
I did. Yeah.
Stacy, are you going to get the first Wi-Fi connected juicer?
Or are you going to use your hands?
Yeah. Or are you going to use your hands?
Okay, y'all.
A $400 juicer was originally down from $700.
Is it the June juicer? The Juner?
It's the Juicero. Okay. Well, that's what I thought. Maybe Stacy would like one of these. It's really well made.
I've tested it. I've actually, okay, so.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yes. It's connected.
We're going to get truth now from Stacy.
This is sad, and you guys are going to make fun of me, but I know Doug Evans, the former CEO and the founder of Juicero, and everyone's making fun of this. And I'm not saying they shouldn't make fun of the fact that there's a $400 juicer that squeezes these things. But Doug Evans' goal and the reason it raised so much money was not because of the juicer, the press. The reason is because Doug Evans' big goal in this company was to rethink how people got their food and got their vegetables. And he wanted to create an accountable supply chain for fresh greens and fresh juice and make it easy for people to consume. So the hardware was secondary to his vision. It was crucial to it, but it's not what the company is about. And I think what happened is he overfeatured it. It's too much, right? Boy, and it became really expensive.
Boy, that happens,
and we were in
this.
It does. I mean, like, it takes a very disciplined product manager person to say, wait a second, this is not a good idea. We don't need the strength of two Teslas. So while everyone's mocking everyone involved for giving $120 to a connected juicer company that doesn't even require the juicer, that's actually not what this company's about.
You know who agrees 100% with you?
The CEO of the juicing company?
No, Ivanka Trump. She loves the idea of daily cold-pressed juice. We can make at home. Yes.
Excellent.
Please. She even created a Bitly link just for you.
I'm going to do my permanent invitation hero.
I think we also use the same makeup, believe it or not. We have the same preference. I think it's our what's it called? It's Yves Saint Laurent.
Well, we won't know.
Touch
nice
magic
eyeball toucher. Yeah,
it's a I don't. I'm not a makeup person.
Your contouring is excellent. Don't give me that.
Like I do not know how. Still,
she's the queen of contour. She's watched all the videos.
I have.
Did you read
the videos.
Ben Einstein's fabulous Bolt article about the Juicero and how over-engineered it is? And by the way, not in a bad way. I mean. He said, of course, if this were our investment, we might have slowed them down a little bit. But they did this stuff. This is like, if you were going to pick a squeezing device that is made to perfection, this is it. This is the best squeezing device ever. And it's just too bad that people might go out and get those Juicero pouches of already juiced vegetables. Let's say that. They're already juiced. And squeeze them by hand.
They're already juiced. The inside is like, it's the consistency of frozen chopped spinach.
So you're saying the Juicero is doing more than just extruding this from the bag. It's actually processing it?
It's not processing it.
It's extruding the raw vegetables
that are, and you just kind of squeeze it. Haven't you seen raw frozen spinach?
Yeah. So is it the stuff you get any different from the Juicero that you get from squeezing it with your hand?
Oh, no. It's the same stuff.
Okay, just checking.
But in Juicero's been open. At the demos, they show, they will cut open a bag and they will show you the stuff inside. And
so they should really just give away the juicer and charge $39 a month for the bags.
The bags are very expensive. They're like $6 to $8. But they could just do that. The thing they're most concerned with, like the accountability, I think they probably could have done with like a QR code or a scanner in an app.
That's what he said. He said, no, the reason you need the Wi-Fi is it checks the date. It makes sure it's, you know, it's good. I don't know. Maybe they're selling my juice preferences back to Boober.
They are. They're communicating things back to the farmers. Again, is this... This is not solving world hunger. This is just to get people to eat locally organic vegetables.
$120 million in venture capital.
But his goal was to disrupt the food supply chain.
How?
I mean, by letting people...
By making $1 billion selling a $400 juicer.
Giving people the confidence. So selling it in an easy way, giving people the confidence that it's, you know... whatever, not expired, which is a big problem actually with juice. The unpasteurized juice.
You could get a real juicer and buy fresh fruit and then you'd really
people don't do that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, think about sales of like microwave dinners.
You know why people don't do it? Because it's hard to clean afterwards. It's easy to juice, but hard to clean.
I don't know. I mean,
will there be a big market in Juicero bags, or can you not get a subscription without buying the juicer?
You have to have the juicer to get the bags, I believe.
Or you could just eat the
fruit. You could create a gray market in them.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not saying this is great. I just...
Well, I'm sure out of business. Don't you think?
Probably, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
You never know. Silicon Valley, I mean, some of these companies...
What's interesting to me... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, this isn't like QCAT, I don't think.
No. Or is it?
Jesus. Oh, that was... I sat in on the demonstrations of those guys.
There was a QR code reader. The idea was you'd be reading a magazine and you'd want something in the magazine and you'd have this thing. It looked like I have one, actually. And you'd scan the barcode in the magazine and then it would go to your computer because you did have a computer. It was connected by the serial port and would go to the computer and launch the web page for that thing.
Because no one's ever going to do this thing called a URL.
Type out the URLs? Never.
Type out the address? No, never going to happen.
All right.
But now we're getting image search for things on our phones and getting ads. So,
actually, that's one of the things Bixby does do, unless you're a Verizon customer, who unaccountably turned it off. Bixby on this S8, you take a picture of something. Here's my QCAT. Look.
Yeah.
It exists. It's a little kitty. These came out of Austin, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
The guy who did it had these huge gold cufflinks. I focused on this with the QCAT logo on them. It was, you know, an aftershave you could smell for the next week.
Radio Shack sold
And
them.
It was just so slick.
Yeah. I wonder if I go to...
Go ahead.
No, go.
If you go to getcat.com, can you still... Oh,
what I found interesting was Leo's point that you have an idea about how to change something... And you, as I do find this fascinating, that he wants to change the supply chain here, but figuring out what the real value is of what you sell and what it's perceived as is everything. So people perceived the value as the juicer, and it was not. It was the juice.
Right.
Might have
something to do with the fact that the
how you priced it affected that perception.
$700 mm-hmm. bucks. I mean...
Yes, totally. I mean, and I think that's when we're doing our business case studies about this, that's probably closer to the lesson you should take. Not that this is absolutely
don't let
asinine.
Your engineers over engineer your product.
Probably.
You know, keep a lid on costs. That's, you know what? I honor him. What's his name?
Doug Evans.
He's
such a hippie. He's not like, he's the polar opposite of 90% of the entrepreneurs I meet, except that he's got the same passion.
Right.
But sandal wearing dude, kind of chill.
He'll be back. He'll be back. Failure is not a stigma in Silicon Valley. It's a badge of honor.
I don't think he's really a Silicon Valley dude, to be honest.
Is he from Austin?
No. I mean, he lives there, but he's not like that. Serial entrepreneur. He just saw a problem, a way to solve a problem that he thought existed. And, you know, I...
Let's do our picks of the week. It's the top of the hour. Jeff Jarvis, yes. Your top 10 bands you've seen with one band that you haven't seen.
Oh, I hate this. I've taken over Facebook.
What is wrong with Facebook?
Me nuts.
Before that, it was the Jeez. It was that list of do you have how many states have you visited? How many tats do you have? Now it's this. It's really creating posts that no one will read. It's just
I don't care about your damn bands, people.
No one's reading that.
Care.
You spend hours making this thing up, makes you feel good, and it's just pollution. Here's Jeff's post. I don't know. How did you make that text so big?
He was typing really hard.
I debated for 3 minutes whether to use the F word or not.
Oh, yeah.
Decided not to.
Oh, yeah. It's time for our picks. Why don't you start, Stacey Higginbotham?
Oh, man. I knew you were going to ask.
Okay, why don't you start, Jeff Jarvis?
Yeah. Thank you.
She was going to start. She was going to do the juicer, and now she's going to find something else.
Oh, no. I love my June oven. I just want to say I love it. So glad we bought it. Love it. In fact, I love it so much, I finally broke down the box it came in.
Wow. Ooh, that's commitment.
That's important. That's like unpacking at the girlfriend's house, yeah.
Ooh, yeah. I'll do that someday, too.
So Verily, the spinoff of Google Worked on Health, has just announced Project Baseline, looking for 10,000 volunteers to share tons and tons and tons of their medical data. And I signed up to volunteer, and I'm going to bet you will too, Leo. And they ask some questions about some basic questions, and then you're going to go in like 2 full days a year. You got to devote to this plus a couple of visits. You're going to give all kinds of precious bodily fluids.
What? Why would I sign up for this,
Jeff?
You're going
to give history and test for the good of society. This is like giving your DNA.
Okay.
This is giving data so that they can get a baseline of data across many people.
They're not going to sell it to Uber, are they?
Yeah. Well, they know if you're limping, you need a ride.
Yeah.
They'll charge you more.
But this is the same Verily that was doing the diabetic lens, right? The contact lens?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
I think it was. It is. It's on there.
Verily. You will get a Verily study watch, which tracks your movement, heart rate, rhythm, changes, skin's electrical conductance. They'll pay you a little. If you're in the study, they'll pay you a little bit for your trouble. This is the first large-scale population health study since the, or one of the few. This is not the first, of course. The Framingham Heart Study.
That's where all your BP data comes from, actually. I have written about it.
Right.
So wait, this is Verily. The Framingham Heart Study was done by hospitals, and I really wish that they would have funded a neutral party, because this is, again, a space where I'm like...
But they're doing it with Duke and Stanford. Does that make it better?
No, because Google's doing the money, and yes, it makes it slightly better. But you know, do they have to abide by some of the codes of ethics? What is it, IRB review boards and things like that? I don't know. So I would be very cautious and careful about this data, just because.
Of course, I blew that to the wind and signed up.
Okay.
So you have to apply.
Everybody knows about my prostate, so what the hell?
Well, yeah. I think this is good. I mean, the only way to do this is with these big, large, longitudinal studies.
Yes, I just don't think they have to be done by companies. Just a thing.
Yeah.
Well, good. I mean, it's good to volunteer your medical data.
Yeah, it starts because you have to find a site near you. So, I could go down to Palo Alto.
Then it goes ahead and says we're going to be adding them all over, so keep going in the thing. Takes about 10 minutes. I did it while we were on, before the show started.
Here's a quick overview.
I thought you were saying we're debating fake news.
Here's a quick overview of the next steps. Step 1, log in. Step 2, informed consent. Step 3, profile. Let's go. Okay. So you sign in, but eventually I'll have to go down to Stanford, I guess, because that's the nearest...
Or they'll have lots of others.
No, but I think this is altruistic to sign up for this. And you and I, Jeff, have no privacy, so we're perfect.
No, exactly. That's what I figure. Yeah.
Well, when you start getting into medical data, though, you do, like with 23andMe, you're also...
Oh, screw my kids. Giving... I don't care.
Okay. Fair enough.
That's what you were going to say, right? You're giving away your genotype for your children.
Well, that and, you know, the government's interested in looking at that data. So, like, you start thinking about this. What, we don't have safeguards in place for this stuff yet, and we're just giving it all away. And
well,
you can't,
until they start putting type 2 diabetics in concentration camps, I think I'll be okay.
What if they make you charge? They charge you. Well, they do charge higher insurance rates. But
we're
think
stuck
about
there anyway.
Yeah, I can't lie.
Yeah,
we're stuck
I know.
There anyway.
In fact, an insurance company prays you'll lie to them, because that way they can deny you insurance when you ask for coverage. They say, "No, no, you didn't tell us." They don't want to know. Okay. They would rather you lied to them. Find out later.
Okay.
I don't know. All right.
I'm gonna
hold off and read more. I'm not gonna do it during the show.
I don't know, Stacey. You're giving your entire June diet to a company. You know, I mean,
I'm giving my family's entire June diet.
Worse.
Right.
You're exploiting your child's grilled cheeses.
Uber now has videos of the salmon that you're eating tonight.
I was like, my love of broccoli is known. But like, I mean, maybe if I only baked cookies in the June oven 24/7 and had them every day for dinner, maybe I wouldn't want to share that.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason I'm comfortable sharing my diet is
it's very healthy.
Good.
You have a very healthy diet. Well, you think it's good. We don't know what Uber Hospital is going to think, or the new Uber Health Plan. What is your pick of the week, Stacey?
Okay, so my pick of the week was going to be talking about the Google Home recipe stuff, because
we didn't do it,
really,
so you can do it. We didn't mention it.
Exactly.
You can do it.
So Google Home, it's going to be rolling out the next week, and I haven't tried it because I'm not at my home, so I don't have my Google Home. You're going to be able to find a recipe on the web or on your phone and send it to home, and then you're going to be able to go through the recipe with your Google Home. You can start, stop it, ask it to repeat steps. I wanted this on the Echo forever, and I'm really excited about it. So there you go.
So it'll walk you through it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say pause?
You can, and you can say go back.
So they've had recipes, both Amazon's Echo and Google Home have had recipes before, but they just go through it real quick. So this is nice. So I guess you could look at the app and then see the recipe. But I would love it if it would say, okay, now, Leo, you're going to layer your raspberries in the jar and add,
I don't know if it's going to say Leo,
the cheesecake filling, and then put some crushed, Leo, stop eating the crushed graham crackers. You won't have an Leo.
Stacey, this is cruel. You're showing this to a
I'm immune.
Fasting.
I'm immune.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. This is the beauty of fasting, is I'm immune.
And in the Google Pro, so other Google Home tip for you.
Yes.
Because I just discovered this.
Yes.
Headspace is on there. You can enable Headspace, the Headspace app
Headspace.
On Google Home.
Oh, I got to tell Abby, because I bought her a year subscription to Headspace as a gift. She's been doing
and
it on
her phone.
And she
has your Google Home.
She has my Google Home. So what do you do? You ask?
You say, hold on, I was looking up the keywords.
Don't say the first stuff, but the second stuff.
Talk to Headspace.
Great.
There you go.
I'm messaging her right now.
And you have to activate it. So you have to go into services on your Google app. Oh. I don't know if you do have to add it. Oh, I think it just works.
Andy Puttycomb is sitting right now in my Google Home. I love it. I just texted Abby to try it.
So there you go.
She has my Google Home. So I don't, but yeah, she would at some point have to give it her login to Headspace, I guess.
I don't know if it didn't make me log in.
Headspace is a guided meditation app, which we really, was a sponsor. We love them. And it's a really good one. It's really, really good. Oh, cool. Yeah, she loves it.
So there you go.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come to say goodbye to all our family. But I hope you've had a good time.
402 times.
Yeah. 400. We have done, wait a minute, I have it right here. Where did I put it? I have the list because Patrick Delahanty has a script. It's written down here. This, we have done to date 28 days, 18 hours, 50 minutes, and 53 seconds of This Week in Google. So I'm going to add to that 1 hour, 52 minutes, and 39 seconds. So we have now done 20 hours, 10 minutes, and 50, 60, 78 seconds of This Week in Google. And if you've listened to all of it, you get a prize. this fine cute cat.
I'm like, sit here. Ooh, what's the price?
but be warned, you have to have a PS2 port to use it. Jeff Jarvis is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York, where there are some very lucky graduate school students in journalism. He also blogs at buzzmachine.com. He's at Jeff Jarvis. Are you traveling soon?
London next week.
Will we have you from London?
Well, it depends on when we want to do the hotel thing. I've got a dinner, so I don't know if I'll be out in time.
All right. We'll find others.
I warned Karsten.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Karsten. It's not as good without you, but there's people. We'll sit in.
I'm replaceable.
Stacey Higginbotham, thanks once again to Wagner Edstrom. I'm sorry, for letting you use their offices.
Yeah.
And, of course, catch Stacey on her IoT podcast at iotpodcast.com. Does that with the wonderful Kevin Toefel. She's at GigaStacey on the Twitter. Thank you, everybody. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. If you want to watch live, you could join us the live stream. There's live streams everywhere. Twit.tv/live, YouTube.com/twit, Twitch.tv/twit, Ustream.com/twit, and join us in the chat room, which is live-ish, IRC.twit.tv. But if you can't be here live, don't worry. On-demand audio and video is always available at our website, twit.tv/twig, and wherever you subscribe to your finer podcasts. We did not win the People's Choice Award in the Webbies. We came this close. Marketplace stepped it up at the last minute. We came this close.
At least it was a good show. I mean, like, you weren't...
Oh, yeah, we were close. It was 1% or 2%. But we did win the Webby in the judging.
Yay!
So it worked out.
So you're coming to New York?
No. You know why?
Your wife said you were.
Well, I thought we were until we found out the requirements. You don't necessarily get on stage. You have to show up the day before on Sunday, give your five-word acceptance speech. Then they decide which of the ones they liked to put you on stage the next day. And, oh, by the way, it'll be $6,000 for a table. So we're going to stay home. I'm going to Google I.O. with you. That's what I'm going to do instead.
Yeah. Yay. Far better.
It's the same week. I'm going to stay home, go to Google I.O. We'll have live coverage.
And have margaritas.
Yeah. That'll
be celebrate fun. Celebrate your
Webby. I still get Google the trophy. It's in June.
Okay.
I don't know. Why? Can you come out too?
I don't know.
Please? May 16th. It's soon.
Oh, yeah, that's soon. I feel like I'm somewhere else.
Yes, I do too. I often feel that way, but maybe it's because I haven't eaten in 2 days. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.